This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Welcome, everybody, to today's briefing. My name, as everybody said, is Nick Johnson. I'm director of the Center's State Fiscal Project. And today's call is about our new report on film tax credits. Now, each of you should have received the report and related press release via email this morning. And both of those are also available now on our website, centeronbudget.org. As you all know, states face continuing loss of revenue due to the recession, and this is leading to large projected shortfalls and large cuts in areas from education to healthcare, transportation, public safety, human services. There are other parts of the budget that do not appear to be receiving as much scrutiny, particularly the spending that occurs through the tax code. And today we're going to talk about one area of such spending, the subsidies for film and television production. Our study today explains why this kind of scrutiny would be critically important. We're joined on the call this morning by the study's author, Robert Tannenwald. Bob joined the center in 2010. He's now a senior fellow with our state fiscal project. Previous to joining the center, he served as a vice president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, where he worked for 28 years. He also founded and was director of the bank's New England Public Policy Center. Bob has published extensively on state and local taxation over the course of his career, and he is a former president of the National Tax Association. Following Bob's brief remarks, we'll turn to your questions, and I will call on you in turn for your questions at that time. But at this moment, I'll open it to Bob to provide an overview of his report. Bob?
Thank you, Nick, and thank you all for joining us on this call. The paper released today has three main points. I'd like to explain them briefly in my opening remarks. First, state film tax credits are exceedingly generous to film producers and therefore extremely costly to the many states that offer them. Second, for all their generosity, film tax credits have not enabled these states to create new, good, stable jobs for their residents. Third, because film tax credits have been so costly and ineffective, they have undermined states' ability to maintain and strengthen proven building blocks of sound economic development. Good public schools, effective public safety, quality of life, and efficient, reliable, modern infrastructure. Here's how film tax credits work. A producer chooses to shoot a movie in a particular state. The producer spends, say, $1 million within the state to make the film. The state gives the producer a tax credit valued at a set percentage of the in-state expenses it incurs while producing the movie. In a typical state, the percentage is 25%. So in this case, the state would give the producer 25% of $1 million, or $250,000. If the producer doesn't owe enough tax to use the whole credit, some states give the producer the entire credit anyway. Other states instead allow the filmmaker to sell the tax credits it can't use to other companies, like banks and insurance companies, who then use the credits to reduce their tax liability. So no matter what happens, the film producer gets its subsidy, and the state is on the hook to pay it out to someone in full. During the past 8 years, these sweetheart subsidies have spread across the nation like wildfire. In 2002, only a handful of states offered them. Today, 43 states use generous tax credits to compete for glitzy film productions. During state fiscal year 2010, when most states had to overcome terrible deficits, these states spent $1.5 billion on film tax subsidies. That much money could have paid the salaries of 23,000 middle school teachers, 28,000 firefighters, or 23,000 police patrol officers. Turning to my second point, what have these states gotten for their largesse? Well, some have attracted movie shoots. Movie producers are very footloose and always looking for the best deal. One director from Rhode Island once remarked dryly that a filmmaker would shoot a movie on Mars for a subsidy equal to 25% of all expenses. Incidentally, today 25% isn't the best deal. Michigan offers a subsidy of 42%. But when the film crews arrive and start to roll their cameras, who gets the best jobs from the filming? Non-residents, highly paid media professionals, such as actors, directors, screenwriters, cinematographers, and skilled camera operators. Producers import these highly compensated specialists because places other than LA or New York City can't provide them in sufficient depth. Rather than take chances, producers fill these key slots from pools of skilled professionals who travel around the world from site to site. Local workers, by contrast, get mostly temporary part-time work, such as bit parts, hairdressing, carpentry, catering, sanitation, and security. The locals get paid a lot less than the pros from Hollywood or the Big Apple. And when the producer leaves town, the work disappears. Both expensive and ineffective, film subsidies are exactly the opposite of what an instrument of economic development should accomplish: the creation of jobs and income for residents in a cost-effective manner. According to a study undertaken by the Massachusetts Department of Revenue, in 2008, the Commonwealth lost $88,000 in foregone tax revenue for each additional full-time job created by the Commonwealth's film tax credit and filled by residents. In theory, a film tax credit might still be valuable to a state if the credit attracted a lot of film productions and the state could collect a lot of tax revenue from the highly paid non-residents who help make the movies. If enough revenue could be collected from these non-residents, the state might be able to afford film tax credits and have revenue left over to fund important public services. Unfortunately, this is not the case. For every dollar spent on film tax credits, states get back only 16 cents. This brings us to point three. Because film tax credits cost states so much in lost revenue, they are forced to rob Peter to pay Paul. In order to balance its budget, a state has to raise taxes elsewhere or cut vital services. In the short run, the resulting economic drag stops any boost from film tax credits in its tracks. In the long run, the loss of revenue undercuts a state's capacity to put teachers in classrooms, cops on streets, and healthcare workers in clinics. It deprives states of funds needed to maintain and improve airports, public transport, and roads and bridges. Yet CEOs and business site selection consultants advise that in order to be competitive, a state should upgrade the skills of its workforce, make its streets and parks safer, help its citizens become healthier, and develop first-rate 21st century public infrastructure. Before closing, I'd like to add one more point. Some argue that film tax credits are sound long-term investments that someday will create self-sufficient, subsidy-free film industries capable of competing with LA and New York. This is a pipe dream. Film production is highly mobile, inherently risky, and perpetually in need of subsidization. Better for states to get out now than to become ensnared in this endless fiscal bind. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.